Bigfoot encounters in New York and New England. But we'll take your calls from all over the place when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. Paul Bartholomew with us. Paul, thank you, by the way, for the great information on these creatures. It's fun.
Oh, this has been a great pleasure. Thank you.
Thunderbirds. Tell me some of the stories you've encountered with them.
Well, we don't have a lot of them up in this region that have been reported to me because it's such an odd characteristic. You know, the Bigfoot phenomenon is much more common, but we did get them during that 1976 Hebert Road outbreak. So I don't have much to go on there, only that they had said that it almost looked like it was liquid reality was how he described it. Now, one of the things I can say is that during that flap, we also had a report by a gentleman who had seen UFOs, who also said he saw vintage aircraft in the sky, and that didn't make much sense either. So these are those little loose ends that we're trying to tie up that we're putting out there, and hopefully someday we'll have the answers.
Someday,
Yeah.
someday. I hope sooner than later. Did you ever study anything with any ancient Native Americans or anything like that?
Well, we looked into the whole history here with the Algonquin and the Iroquois, and the old stone giant reports. These creatures are often seen throwing stones and things, and I originally thought that might be why they were called that. But the reality is, what they used to do is they were reported to put sap on their bodies and roll in the ground, and the pebbles would attach to them, and they were thusly called stone giants. So there's a huge history here, going back to the Algonquin and the Iroquois and the Abenaki, and so it's a consistent pattern. There's no question about this is part of our heritage, part of the Native American heritage. This is part of our history that we shouldn't be overlooking. We should embrace this.
We should embrace it, but do we?
No, unfortunately, that's the problem. And we have statements that are made. For instance, the DEC, the Department of Environmental Conservation, made a statement a few years ago that there was nothing to the Bigfoot mystery. They made a formal announcement. And I think what had happened is they were upset because they were getting a lot of attention and inquiries about it. And, there really wasn't much they could say. I could understand their frustration, but it was an odd statement to make. And I throw out a challenge to the DEC because they're great people, do terrific research. But when it comes to this, I have members of the DEC that have reported things to me, and they don't want to report this publicly because they want to remain anonymous, and I understand that, in the same way that police officers have. But there are members of the DEC who have encountered unknown creatures. And rather than shun this stuff, I think we need to explore it, and they shouldn't be afraid to report things like this. And my challenge to the DEC is in the name of science. I would love to give a talk to several officers and present my evidence over 4 decades, and would love to just put it out there as an open forum. And in the interest of science, let's see if we can come to any conclusions.
All right, let's go to some of the phones. Gary is in Vancouver in Canada. Hi, Gary, go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. By the way, I got to get your book. I've read three books of myself on the subject, everything from the Abominable Snowman to the creature in the locally here, either in Vancouver or in Seattle. My story kind of goes this way. I'm 58 years of age, and it happened when I was about 12. A friend of mine and I were at school. It was around 12:15, 12:30 in the afternoon, and he said, "Gary, can I borrow your baseball mitt?" And I said, "Mark, no, you can't really do that because I'm left-handed and you're right-handed. So why don't you just go home and get yours?" Well, we were the school was right next door to a creek, and so he decided he ran across the field, and then all of a sudden I didn't see him at that point because he was out of sight. And about 30 seconds to a minute later, I heard two screams, his and something else. And I guess about 2 or 3 minutes later, he came up and he was white as a ghost. And I mean, scared. And I won't say the word because
don't say it.
But he was scared stiff and in shock. The next thing I knew, there were cops all over the place, teachers, and one police officer said, "Son, you saw a bear." Well, the problem with that was that his father was a hunter. And I saw, as I said before, I saw bear rugs, cougar rugs, antlers. And about a month later, he said, "Gary, I don't want anybody to think that I'm a nut or that I'm seeing things." And I said, "Mark, yes, I know. You saw it." He told me that he described it as being approximately 7 feet to 8 feet tall, predominantly black, running on 2 feet. And what he saw was something that was cleaning itself in the creek. It looked at him, ran, and cleared about a 5-foot fence without even lifting itself over the top. And then it went out of sight. And I've remembered it since. And just to let you know something, I don't care if people think I'm nuts or not. I didn't see it, but I know he did because everybody said, "Well, you know, you're a bit of a nut," but nope, Mark saw it and he wouldn't, you know, most people think that he's, the kids wouldn't say anything. Well, he did, and he did see it. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Thanks.
All right. Appreciate the story. There's a million stories like that, Paul.
That many of the characteristics he named there were popping up, in my mind from other reports. So his friend is in very good company. And, you know, that explanation, sometimes the witnesses, when they have these sightings, they'll say interesting things like, "My mind just shut right off. I was frozen." The shock factor is there. When the police officer got back in the car, when Dan Gordon got back in the car with the other officer said to him, "That was some deer, wasn't it, or some bear?" And he goes, "That was no bear." And he goes, I know. So there is that self-defense thing. And that bear that's sighted up in New Jersey that walks on two legs, they call it pedals because it's bipedal. And so it's walking on two legs. It's doing that because it's got an injured limb, so it's not going to be on all fours. But when you look at it, you go, "Wow, that's a bear." There isn't any, "Oh my goodness, that looks like an ape or a creature or something like that." It's unmistakably a bear. So for these reports, for people to say, you know, the thing crossed the road on three steps, can't be a bear.
Do they all have that cone-shaped head to them?
We don't get that all the time, but many times we do. And that's why Dr. Cook felt that he called it pyroerection, in which the hair on the head stands up. And so it may be a characteristic that happens when the creature is startled or upset or scared or, you know, as almost a defense mechanism.
All right, back to the phones we go. Rudy in Cleveland, Ohio, east of the Rockies. Hey, Rudy, good morning.
Good morning, George and Paul. Good to talk to you. Hey, get cut right to the chase. I was a member of the Army Reserve Aviation Unit that the late Colonel Larry Coyne commanded, and when he was a young captain, made the flight from Cleveland past Mansfield to Columbus on a training flight with his, I would say, competent crew. And so I have a little bit of knowledge, scuttlebutt, on what happened on that particular flight. But he went very public on it. And at this point, Paul, if you have any kind of question, just stop me and go ahead and ask it, because I know you may have read the report that Coyne wrote that's out on the internet, and was very thorough. Two of the four crew members are still alive today. Coyne was a Cleveland police officer before he took on organizing the Army Reserve Unit, and he had a Cleveland police sergeant as his crew chief and a paramedic. And they did, I think, an excellent job of describing the incident. As far as that helicopter goes, You know, we could tell that it had been through some kind of a Star Trekian tractor beam because the avionics and the magnetic compass were not that reliable. So they never really used, we called her 444, they never really used her for very many cross-country flights. So it brings us to the present. There's a database that we've been able to track her. After she left the 316th Med Detachment, she went to Mexico, back to the United States with an international DEA agency in Washington, went back to the manufacturer at Bell, and she now is in the custody of the Colombian Army Air Force, and I even got her tail number. Is there anything I missed, Paul?
No, that was a fascinating case.
Pretty detailed.
Yes, absolutely.
Paul, what fascinates you the most about Bigfoot?
Well, obviously the elusivity. For me, it was that we thought of these creatures back when the olden in search of days were, you know, and so forth. We thought of these creatures as being in the Pacific Northwest or a long ways away. And I think what's most fascinating is that these things are almost everywhere. They are in New York, Vermont, they're in every state, they're in all portions of the world, basically. So this is a global enigma, and I think that's what's so interesting about this. We've had researchers here, Paul Cropper's visited the United States from Australia, and some of the reports of the Australian Yowie and some of the reports of the creatures up here are almost interchangeable. So this is a fascinating enigma. It's a common human experience. And it's something that, you know, we need to study more closely, and we need to get rid of this ridicule factor that pigeonholes respectable witnesses.
We sure do. All right, next up, we go to Woody, truck driving in Texas, first-time caller. Hi, Woody.
Hey, how you doing, gentlemen?
Great.
I had a strange thought, so I wanted to pass it through y'all and see what you think. Because basically, I've been listening to the show, and I find it quite interesting, and Bob quite informative. But what I see is a lot of things in common, which will bring me to the question. And what we discussed is the fact they're all over, pretty much uniform as far as size and sightings and description. Seems to be the main diet is fish, because they're commonly around someone that fishes waiting or they caught something like to eat, and they're all over the place. Now, at the same time, these sightings have been going on for a very long time. So have UFOs. Back in the biblical days when they fought of the giants, they even found a femur bone that confirmed that it should be. There's been skulls found that's larger than a human size at that time and cone-shaped. So if we correlate most of these facts together, it appears to be that a reasonable possibility is this could be or could not be basically a way of UFOs and their observer of society.
What do you think of that, Paul?
Well, I all possibilities are out there. I leave a mind open to any of these possibilities. I tend to think there's more of a source connection here with UFOs and paranormal phenomena, that these are mainly manifestations from the same source phenomena. And I don't know what that source is, but it's something that I just don't think we can keep ignoring it and ridiculing people for it. Once you talk to a witness who is credible, who has nothing to gain, and their life changes when they see something like this, and it's changed forever. So look, I'm open to any possibility and any theory out there. I'm wide open.
Are there many reports of UFO activity around Bigfoot sightings?
Yeah, that's the thing. When we have a lot of Bigfoot reports, and then we have these paranormal outbreaks, in which it just seems like everything goes willy-nilly for a few weeks, and there's Bigfoot sightings, UFO sightings, strange creature reports, electromagnetic problems, things like that. And John Keel had talked about this years ago with several of his books and articles that he had written, And there does seem to be a connection in some instances. There seems to be these outbreaks or flaps of paranormal sightings.
Next up, we go to Lisa in Orlando, Florida. Hello, Lisa. Go ahead.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to say I'm a huge fan of the program.
Well, thank you.
You know, I just think you're just such a class act, Mr. Norrie. And my question is, we're talking about UFOs and all this stuff, and there's an asteroid that has been reportedly heading towards Earth, and I was wondering if your guest thinks that that's an actual asteroid or something else.
Ah, what do you think about that, Paul?
I have no information on that.
Oh, okay.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. Okay.
But you never know. Lisa, let me comment on that, there have been historical reports of craft hiding behind asteroids or comets that happened some time ago. And all those people for the Heaven's Gate folks, they all killed themselves for fear of stuff like that. But you just never know. Do you believe in extraterrestrial life, Paul?
Oh, absolutely. I think we may have it next door in terms of Martian microbes and things like that. In terms of intelligent life out there, I think just by the simple numbers, if you look at the Drake equation and so forth, I think it's overwhelming that there's something, that there would be intelligent life out there.
Star Wars, Chewbacca, was he formed to kind of reflect Bigfoot? He looks just like one.
He sure does, doesn't he? I don't know if that was in Lucas's in the back of his mind or not, but it does appear to be. It's unmistakable that it's Bigfoot-like.
Have there ever been reports of Bigfoot attacking animals?
Yes. During the Hebert Road sighting, there was a downed deer carcass. Now, whether the creature had attacked the deer or whether it came across a downed deer, we really don't know. We do know that it has broken into a barn in the Pennsylvania area and taken some chickens. We've got reports of it taking rabbits, and we've got reports of it tracking, in other words, tracks with smaller animals in those tracks or near those tracks, and we think the creature was tracking those animals. Down in Kinderhook, New York, where Bruce Helmbeck's done tremendous research, there was a report that these creatures were storing possum in a snowbank. So, we do have reports of these creatures. Cook felt that these creatures would be omnivorous and opportunistic, so that whatever food source that they would come across, they would adjust to.
We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM with Paul Bartholomew and your final phone calls, questions, you name it. We'll have it next on Coast to Coast AM. The name of his book is called Bigfoot Encounters in New York and New England. We've got another great show in store for you tomorrow. Plus, we'll have open lines in the second half of the show. So we'll be right back on Coast to Coast AM with the final calls. Okay, welcome back to Coast with our special guest, of course, Paul Bartholomew, as we talk about his work that he wrote with his brother, Bigfoot Encounters in New York and New England. These reports, Paul, continue to come in, I take it?
Yes, we get them all the time. Usually you get the vocal reports or once in a while track finds, but the eyewitness reports come in quite frequently. And obviously the thing is, we want to get these reports as quickly as possible so that we can go to the regions and try to discover any type of physical evidence that might be left behind.
What shocks you about the Bigfoot, about cryptozoology? Anything?
I've been in it now for 4 decades, and I've seen quite a bit. There does appear to be, with the creature phenomena, I think the consistency of it is the most interesting thing. That this isn't something that's a modern, some sort of a pop culture thing like the chupacabra, modern phenomena. This goes way, way back, and it seems to be part of our heritage. We seem to be connected in some way.
I think so, too. Will we ever get the right DNA on these creatures?
Well, I thought that the DNA analysis would shed some light on this and really solve the phenomena from a scientist that were open-minded. But it's become more of a confounded thing between conflicting studies with the same samples and things like that. So, I think the only way that we're going to have this mystery solved 100% is to actually have a body. And I would be opposed to killing anything as spectacular as, or what Cook called a cosmic species. But, you know, the ideal thing would be, if this is a physical creature, then to come across one when it has passed away or was killed in an accident of some sort, and I think that could solve the mystery. Now, with the catamount, there was a catamount that was discovered in Connecticut a few years ago. And so that was actually a case in which the big cat was killed by a car as it was crossing the road. So perhaps something like that will happen, and it'll become known to us that way. Or perhaps we're dealing with something that has paranormal aspects that we may never fully grasp this, but it may be caught up in our understanding of quantum physics.
Are we dealing with anything that could be demonic?
Some people have suggested that. You know, I'm looking at a newspaper clipping right now from 1934. It's called Man, Beast, or Demon. It's loose in Amityville. Mysterious ape-like marauder raids garage, town on guard. Great, great newspaper clipping there. And, of course, Amityville is associated with a rather famous haunted house, and that's one of those things where, you could go either way with being skeptical or pro as to the reality of that case. I think the legacy is with the Amityville children, the Lutz children. I don't know. I'm open to any possibility. If they want to draw a demonic connection, I've worked with and researched with Lorraine Warren before, and she's an expert in those matters, and I respect her research very much.
All right, back to the phones. Let's go to Rudy in Seven Lakes, North Carolina. Thanks, Rudy. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
I have two questions. First question is, do you think that this is some type of alien-human hybrid that went wrong and got loose for some reason? And the second question is, with all the technology that we have now, why can't we find this thing and set up some type of tracking device on it? You know, like how we tag goose and ducks and all that stuff. That's it. Yeah, that's all.
That is an excellent question. And the fact that we don't have a body, I think, is very interesting because we should have one. We should have a specimen by now. Suggests to me that there may be some paranormal aspect we just don't understand of these creatures.
Maybe they bury their dead.
I don't discount that at all. Some of these reports are very odd. We have reports of them disappearing in a flash of light sometimes. And I think that the reports that we have where there's an actual paranormal outbreak of multiple phenomena occurring over constricted period of time, I think that's where the answers are going to come from. And yes, you know, if this was a creature that's so populous that it's being sighted in every state, we should have a body, but we don't. But I don't discount these reports because they are credible. These are extremely credible reports. These are reports that if you took Dan Gordon on a murder case and he was a witness to the murder case, he would be a prime witness. Now, he happens to have witnessed a Bigfoot creature, so he's discounted. So, you know, that's the type of double standard when researching this type of phenomena.
All right, let's go back to the phones now. Skippy's in Minnesota. Skippy, you're on with Paul Bartholomew on Coast to Coast. Hi, Skippy.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Nice show, guys.
Thank you, sir.
See, I've got what I'm going to start with is with, you know, when it comes to the UFOs, there definitely is UFOs. I seen them at age 6, that back in 1969. I seen it come right through. Me and my father were both standing there, and I asked him what it was, and he says, you know, I have no idea, but it ain't from this planet, I can tell you that. And you know, I asked him probably 10 years ago if he remembered that, and he says, how could I forget? But be thankful it still hasn't shown up here in this house. And other for phenomenal stuff, I've seen that too on a farm that I had. You know, things moved around all the time. You could hear things. You could see things. It wasn't from this planet either. I don't know what was going on in that farm, but it's still there today. But the reason I called is I did run into a species up in northwestern Minnesota about a year ago, and I have no idea what this thing was. On I-94, I was driving up, and it was it kind of looked like a larger wolf, you could say, but it was about a little higher than waist high from his back, I would say. It had very muscular, wider rear end, but it had three-piece legs where it kind of went back and then it came down at an angle, and then the third knuckle went straight forward where his foot was, and all four legs were designed like that. And when he turned and looked at me, and we're talking, this thing took up the whole lane of the highway, standing there. And when it turned its face, it had high ears, but it had a bald face, and there was no nose.
No nose at all?
No nose. Just it had flat? A human-like mouth, but it was kind of deformed on one side, but it had a human-like mouth. And this thing just stood. I was in a rig at the time, and this thing didn't, the rig didn't even faze him. He just turned and looked right at me. And I'm looking at this thing, and there's no nose. It was flat. And it had, like, regular eyes. It had, you know, a large mouth. But I have not, and it had really scaggly hair on it, light brown hair, and I have no idea
All right.
what this thing
Paul,
was.
Paul, do you get reports like that, flat noses?
That's very interesting. I don't have many reports like that. You said this was on all fours?
Yes, it was on all fours, and the legs were not like a wolf leg or a dog leg or anything like that. It was a three-piece leg. Hmm. The hind was very muscular. It looked like something like a panda bear, like the back of a panda bear is what it looked like. And the leg kind of came back, you know, went back and then came back forward down and then another stretch at the third knuckle. It was probably about a foot and a half long where it went to the paw. So this thing kind of walked really funny. On all four, and, you know, and I noticed that right away when it was crossing the road. It's like, well, that's not a wolf. Well, this isn't anything I've ever seen before. Huh. And then when it stopped and turned and looked at me, it had a bald face, you know, and it had the dark brown eyebrows, and it had really kind of long, wide eyes, and there was no nose that I could see.
Well, when you say bald face, you mean hairless, right?
Yeah, totally yeah. Hairless. Totally.
Paul, let me ask you this. What description overall do you get from head to toe on Bigfoot?
The general description of the Bigfoot creature that's sighted up here in the Northeast is running in different sizes. Usually it's oversized between 7 and 8 feet tall. Walking upright on two legs, very significant. Having red glowing eyes is very common. Having long hair, sometimes straggly or sometimes kind of matted, usually dark in color. In fact, sometimes the witnesses will say it seemed unnaturally dark. And those are interesting reports that pop up with multiple witnesses that I think is really interesting. And making a sound like a pig squealing or a woman screaming. In fact, in some of these cases, people were alerted to the creature thinking that a woman was being attacked. Now, for that previous caller, you know, we may have all sorts of cryptozoological mysteries out there. The Dover Demon, you know, that Lauren Coleman investigated,
yeah.
Dogman accounts. We have reports of black panthers, black catamounts in this area, which just drives, you know, the officials nuts when they hear something like that. you know, the Chupacabra reports. Look at the stranger reports, like the Flatwoods Monster, the Spring-Heeled Jack. So there's a whole assortment of creatures out there. So you may have glimpsed something very unique and very interesting. I'd love to have you get that encounter to me. That the details of that would be fascinating to follow up on.
All right, let's take a few more calls. We've got Darlene in Louisville, Kentucky. Hi, Darlene.
Hi, how are you all?
I'm fine, thanks.
Your program tonight is extremely interesting.
It is indeed. Did you ever see a Bigfoot?
No, and I do live in the next to the National Forest here in Louisville, well, Jefferson County. In where is sometimes we see some lights up there, but we kind of say, oh, it's somebody up there hunting things to see. But I've never seen Bigfoot, but what prompted me to call you was the touching upon the UFOs, and I asked the question that could the Roswell incident be the technology there have been the reverse technology, and that's why we've had so many such a quick rise in our technology. That's the whole world, not just the America.
Well, that's an interesting take on that.
Yeah, that's something maybe Stanton Friedman would offer a lot more insight on. The Corso information is very interesting, but there's so much of a contradiction with Phil Corso. So it's one of those things where, you know, technology is technology, and how fast we excel, we're going to use anything and everything we can to excel. And you wonder if maybe we haven't drawn some sort of, I think it would be logical that we would draw whatever technology we could from a downed craft. I think we would use it for military applications and defense purposes. I don't think that's any type of question for that.
We've got Adam in Falls, Pennsylvania now. Hi, Adam. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, touching on the topic of the one guy asking why hasn't any officials ever come forward with it. Up my way, I live in Wyoming County, Scranton, Wilkes-Barre area. Well, there's been sightings of mountain lions, and I've had friends show me pictures of hunters that got them. And the Game Commission just comes there and they say, listen, give me your phone, give me all the pictures you have. You never seen this thing. It doesn't exist. And they still claim that mountain lions don't exist around our area. But touching on the topic of Bigfoot, when I was about 12 years old, me and my friends, we were sleigh riding up this golf course called Emanin, and me, my one friend Kevin, and Joe were sleigh riding, and there was this creature about 6'8" to about 7 foot tall, 7'4" maybe, walking across the golf course about 100 yards across the fairway. And, you know, us being young punks or whatnot, we're yelling at it, you know, profanity words. And the thing did not respond. It just kept on walking, like with that Bigfoot walk. And it's just been something eerily, like, that's kind of spooked me throughout the years, you know, to walk around my town and, you know, around at nighttime or whatnot, because it was getting towards later in the evening.
But they never attack people, apparently.
No. But, like, you know, there's been a lot of odd things in my area. Like, I come from a small town, so, like, growing up, me and my friends, we used to sit and watch the stars at night up in our area. And Newton Ransom, I've heard, that used to be a UFO hotspot back in the 80s. So one night, you know, during a summer night, you know, we're out of school. I'm about 13 or 14 at the time. Me and my buddy, Joe, and...
The clock's going to get you, unfortunately, on that, Adam, but at that first part, you've definitely got some creatures out there. Paul, thank you. Bigfoot encounters in New York and New England. For Nathan Staten, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borelson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.